Dave, you know what sucks? Snow tires suck.
Putting
chains on your tires sucks. You know what's cool?
What's cool?
Weather Claws. Smartest traction system for your car this winter. Super easy to get on. Your 70-year-old granny can strap on Weather Claws on her tires. This is the thing. We heard Weather Claws. We both thought the same thing. Awesome Wolverine claws on your tire.
That can claw you out of a parking spot.
Except at the same time, we thought, boy, that's going to really increase taxes to pay for all the roads these things are going to tear up.
Right.
But this is not Weather Claws. Weather Claws, the best way we could describe it is it looks like you're putting your tires in bondage, but bondage of safety.
Yes, because that's really important, is to have safe words, and there's nothing safer than Weather Claws.
Self-tensioning. It can form and grip to your tire profile, grasping the terrain for full traction and your tire itself. And my favorite thing about them is that they clean themselves like a cat.
Like a cat that can get you out of a parking spot.
Again, not to misrepresent Weather Claws, they don't actually have a feline tongue.
No.
But they just self-clean themselves. You don't have to pick snow out of the chains. You don't have to pick snow out of the tires. They don't clog. They don't lose traction. They're awesome. And again, best part about this, they're road and vehicle friendly. Not going to mess up your car. Not going to mess up the roadway under normal operating conditions either. Maximum traction on snow, snow-packed ice, loose dirt, mud and sand. Weather Claws are the thing you need to get instead of silly snow tires, which are just extra cost. You don't need. You got tires already. Or throw in chains. Two chains. Four chains. Maybe you've got like an all-terrain militaristic vehicle that needs six or eight chains.
I mean, whatever chains you need.
Throw the chains away. Weather Claws are the way to go. Go to weatherclaws.com and get 20% off using promo code PUCKSOUP. Again, weatherclaws.com. See for yourself. They're awesome. And you get 20% off your order using the promo code PUCKSOUP. Enjoy the show.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports Puck Daddy Blog.
And I'm Kate Hudson for Fabletics.
Damn, I was in my mind, I made a bet with myself that said Ken Bone joke right there.
No. This is going to be my thing now, is to point out celebrities that endorse shitty things that nobody wants. And by the way, I didn't realize it until I started to look it up to make sure I had one. Like, celebrities endorse everything. I don't want to go into the full list now and spoil the shows for the year.
But I don't want to get off on a rant here.
I don't want to get off on a rant
Dennis
here.
Dennis Miller, circa 88.
This capitalism thing is just not working, babe.
Yeah. It's like when Copernicus.
Like when Socrates is out here endorsing the sundial.
You're pushing a stone up a hill and you got a vulture eating your guts. Well, thank you. Everybody who watched the John Lovett seasons of SNL rolling in the aisles right now, everybody else is like, why are they talking about that Fox News commentator?
Keith Olbermann's like, good joke, guys.
Oh, by the way, you're in Puck Soup. Please go on.
No, that's it.
No, I thought you were talking about the celebrity.
There's a lot.
In Japan, there's a lot. They all go overseas and do it because they don't think that we could ever see the ads, except there's this amazing invention called the intranet, I believe.
Right, like when Joey was selling purple lipstick for men in Japan on that episode of the TV show Friends.
Have we ever talked about my favorite Joey thing on Friends?
Oh, my God. Let's do it right
all
now.
All right, here it comes.
Cancel the show. Let's do this.
Cancel the three-ring circus. It's the episode where he has to do a nude scene in that show.
That was just on last night.
Right,
I think.
And he wraps lunch meat around his penis because he has to look uncut. That was it?
But he goes with silly putty. Caller on the line.
Sorry, my computer binged. He goes with silly putty or they went with lunch meat?
Well, like she like put together some lunch meats and there was some actual things that involved like fabric. Mm-hmm. But he said the one that worked best was silly putty. So he went with that, and then it fell off, and the guy who's on 30 Rock was like, oh my God, your penis fell off, LOL. And that was that episode. That was on last night. My favorite thing is still the milk. Mm. I can watch him pour that milk down his face once a day, every day for the rest of my life and laugh my balls off.
Think they'll use that penis joke again on Man with a Plan?
What's Man with a Plan?
Man with a Plan is this new sitcom on CBS where all old comedic actors go to die.
Is that the one with Joel McHale?
No, no, no. That's another. There's okay.
I watch football on Sunday too, but you, I tune the commercials.
You have
sometimes.
To understand. There's a CBS sitcomiverse where Matt LeBlanc, Kevin James.
That's the name of the show.
Man with a Plan.
Oh.
Kevin James, Joel McHale. They all exist in the CBS sitcomiverse.
Like Joel McHale.
And isn't Ted Danson back on CBS too in The Good Life?
He's on
with Kristen Bell, or is that on NBC?
He's on NBC. Hmm. And is it called The Good Life?
Sure.
Okay.
It's like everything I've heard about the show reminds me of Defending Your Life with Albert Brooks.
But like Matt, the Man with the Plan, I remember seeing the commercial during the Jets game on Sunday, and they were like, Matt LeBlanc returns to television. And I'm like, fuck you, Showtime is television.
Yeah.
And he was on it for many, many years, you assholes.
Oh, this is, I have a really, really, I'm very optimistic now about Man with a Plan. First line of the Variety review, women, they go to work now. Who knew? Oh, boy.
Oh, it was Jenna Fischer.
No, no. You really need to catch up on your Man with a Plan stuff. Jenna Fischer was originally cast, and then they got rid of her.
Oh.
Because she had absolutely no chemistry with the comedic genius that is Matt LeBlanc.
I don't like your tone when you say comedic genius. That is Matt LeBlanc. That man is a comedic genius. So who do they replace her with? Like, who's the big name, like woman actress on the show that's now going to be, like, his love interest?
Oh, Meryl Streep.
Oh. Yeah. I don't know if she's really, you know,
all right, listen,
right for that part.
There's a game that Doug Benson plays called the IMDb game. And the way it works is that when you go to IMDb, every actor or actress has four things, four, like, posters under their name.
Yeah.
The four things they're best known
they're
for.
They're known for.
What are the four things that Matt LeBlanc is best known for?
Friends, episodes,
okay.
Ed.
Okay.
And... boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's in some really bad movie that I think he...
He's in a lot of bad
that he wrote, I think. It's like a really bad movie.
Being friends with the character, the actors on Friends doesn't count.
No.
That's not actually one of the entries.
Friends, the monkey movie, episodes... And the remake of the old TV show with the space and Gary Oldman.
Oh, Lost in Space.
Lost in Space.
Yeah, with the space monkey and William Hurt sleepwalking through another role.
That was a really bad movie.
Dad, there's a meteor coming right at the ship.
Wait, I want to click now and see the answer.
The answer for those watching at home, Friends, Joey, Charlie's Angels, where he played...
Oh, yeah.
Drew Barrymore? Cameron Diaz's boyfriend?
No, the other one.
Drew Barrymore?
Lucy Liu.
Lucy Liu's boyfriend?
Lucy Liu's boyfriend that didn't know what she did for a living.
And episodes.
Joey. Ugh.
Actually, I mean, I thought the fourth thing would be his appearance in the Rembrandt's I'll Be There For You video, but that's not one of them.
I think people forget just how nutty of a phenomenon Friends was. Like, I know looking back now, it's corny and bad and campy and shitty sitcom-esque, but like, geez.
It was before the explosion of peak TV. Where everybody kind of watched the same five or six channels.
Yeah.
And like and that's why I find it so funny when like Entertainment Weekly or whatever will write up like everybody's watching New Girl. I'm like, literally that is
I know.
You could it is not even comparable to what used to be as far as everybody's watching X show.
Like people just watch an entire season of Stranger Things and then don't stop talking about it for like 8 months.
Right.
And then like what was the other one? You just said it. The one with the girl from The Office with the red hair who also has a commercial Kimmy Schmidt.
Yeah, you said that.
Like people I mean tweeted about that nonstop for like 2 months. I haven't seen anybody mention it since. I know it's still going, but like
I think The Walking Dead is maybe a show that has that is in that zeitgeist of it being a shared cultural experience.
I didn't realize that was still on too. I saw a commercial for that where the dude from the comic book movie, the comedian guy with the bat.
Yeah.
First of all, I here's the thing I've never understood in movies. Is like a menacing man holding a baseball bat, right? Who's gonna do some killing?
Mm-hmm.
And he has like a spike in the bat or like a chain around
barbed
the bat.
Wire around the bat.
Right. The fucking bat will kill the person. You don't need to wrap it in barbed wire. Like imagine that. Like you come out and you're like, Dave, I'm gonna kill you, and you're holding a bat, and I'm like, I'm fucking afraid of you. And you put barbed wire on it, and I'm like, whoa.
I am no Ken Hitchcock when it comes to military history. But but don't you think that's basically a bayonet? Like if I can't get you with my primary mode of bludgeoning, at least I'm gonna fuck you up with the barbed wire.
But But like, if you make contact with the barbed wire, you're pretty much making contact with the bat.
I think like a glancing blow. Just like a glancing blow.
Oh, I'm scratched. You got me. Like imagine.
Ow.
Imagine like a Civil War gun with like a bayonet at the end of it, but like wrapped around the bayonet is like, I don't know.
And you're like, hey man, that looks pretty bad. I know, I need to get some antiseptic, and then boom, with a bat when you're not looking.
There are so many dumb things in movies and TV shows like that where, especially, here's the thing too I love is like, all right, I got a gun. I got to point it at you. You're scared. I'm getting ready to kill you. I'm asking you questions. I want to know a thing. And then I cock the gun. Okay, I'll tell you everything. Like, wait, so if the gun couldn't fire before then? And the people, no. Apparently the gun can just fire a little bit quicker. There's that. And there's the fact that whenever somebody has coffee or tea, it's an empty fucking cup, and we all know it. You ever noticed that? Like,
it's an empty fucking cup, or it's there to be too hot or to provide a spit take.
Yes, like that's the only time there's something in the cup is when it spills. Whenever someone's just carrying it for show, and like if you carry 4 Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts and set it down, it has a weight to it. And you can just tell when they slide it on the table, they're just 4 empty cups.
My favorite thing of all time in any movie or show when it comes to that is it's a fact, and I'm sure there's a supercut about it somewhere. Every single paper shopping bag that someone is holding will have some large loaf of bread, probably a baguette, sticking out of it.
Because that's what you do when you go shopping, is you get the baguette.
But it's to signify that that's a grocery bag.
Right.
Otherwise, you'd be like, oh, it's just a bag of dildos.
Is Kevin going out shopping for dildos again? That's actually a really good idea, is to have like a giant dildo sticking out of the bag to signify shopping.
You're like a scary movie parody.
Right.
Honey, I'm home. Did you bring the dildos? No, it's actually groceries. You can tell by the baguette.
I don't know. That's not a baguette. The other thing too, remember, this usually happened in 80s movies, because this was on the other day, Say Anything, the classic with John Cusack. Yeah. There's a scene when he first meets the dad that's like ripping off the old people, John Mahoney.
John Mahoney, yeah.
Mahoney. Mahoney?
Yeah.
John, whatever.
John, something Irish.
And he's just like, so, what's your future plans there, Lloyd? And Lloyd, like, does the whole thing. Like, I don't want to do
anything
processed.
I'm not going to buy anything sold or processed or process anything bought or sold.
And, like, it's like a long sort of, like, monologue that's, like, you know, goofy and charming. And he's like, I want to be a kickboxer, but I don't know if I'm great. You got to be great. I got to get some fights in. I think I'm good. But then, like, everyone's reaction at the table doesn't match what he said. This would happen all the time in movies where, like, a guy would say something and they'd be like, oh, what's going on with this guy? Like, the reaction there was as if he had said, you know, I'm going to join the Klan when I get out of high school. As opposed to just, he wants to kickbox these figuring stuff out. And they were all like, oh my God.
Oh my God, how dare you? Oh, dude, Lord. I bought anything solar process.
How can you date this man? I don't know. That's an old movie. Listen, thing. It drives me nuts.
It's the NHL season starts tonight as we do this show, which means it starts this week when you hear the show.
Right.
And Dave and I have list of 5 hopes and dreams each.
Goals and objectives.
For the NHL 2016-17 season.
Hold on, let me get Matt LeBlanc's face off my computer so I can focus.
As we do the show, by the way,
he's a handsome man.
It's hours after, and this is going to shock you, Buffalo received some bad sports news. We're doing this show after Jack Eichel was injured. We don't know the status yet, but obviously, hopefully not.
He's
bad.
Fine. He's fine.
And then also, we do it the day after Sidney Crosby's concussion stuff came out.
He's back.
And he's skating around and doing his thing.
What a weird place.
Why do
is.
You think they were so cagey about what happened in practice? Because he got injured on Friday, and then Mike Sullivan said, well, we're not going to go into the details of how he got injured. And then Sid's like, well, I got tangled up. And then someone's like, but how did it happen? And Sid turned to the media. He said, were you guys there? They're all like, yeah. He's like, you didn't see it? They're all like, no, that's why we're asking you. Kind of like how in a game, if we don't see something happen, we kind of want to know what happened. And he's like, well, I don't know what to tell you then.
Just like, but basically, that's like interrogation 101, where like you tipped your hand too soon to the person who now knows you didn't see what happened. And they're just like, well, not my problem. You didn't see it.
So is your theory the commonly held theory that they are protecting somebody on the team who accidentally hit Sid? By accident?
I buy that.
Yeah.
I don't buy the World Cup thing because, as you may have pointed out, I don't know, 145 times, there were 3 checks the entire tournament series, whatever you want to call it. So, it makes sense. Like, you don't want to be... Like,
we've received more checks doing this show than Sidney Crosby received in the World Cup.
Shh. Oh, man. I would have got instant rim shot up on the computer if I knew we were doing that today. But I'm bumped. No, yeah, because think about it. Like, let's no matter who it was on the team. Like imagine it was Phil Kessel. Phil Kessel's built up all this goodwill over the summer. He's doing shtick on Twitter. He's winning. He's winning the cup. He's getting robbed at Conn Smythe, and now he becomes the guy who accidentally put his shoulder into the jaw of Crosby. You don't want that.
But knowing he's such a jokester, I bet it was a situation where Phil was using the blade of his stick to tickle Sid's ear, and then Sid quickly wrapped around and banged his head against the stick. And now, how do you explain that?
Well, then at that point, I would totally confess. I'd be like, this idiot was putting a stick in my face, knowing that I have serious brain issues from previous concussions. It's not funny. Phil.
I can't believe nobody in the media saw Chris Kunitz cradling Sid's head like Pacino with De Niro at the end of Heat.
Tom Sestito took his head and just rammed it into the Zamboni door over and over again because he's voting Hillary Clinton instead of Donald Trump. What the hell? Let's make America great again, Sid. He's like, wait, I'm a Canadian citizen. I can't vote anyway. This joke doesn't make any sense.
Shut up. Locker room talk.
Locker room talk.
Yeah.
I don't blame, you know what? I don't blame the media because, like, I don't know about you, but, like, I'm at a point when I go to a practice, I'm just waiting for the first guy to leave the ice so I can go to the locker room and talk to people. Yeah. Like, I'm not looking at, like, stuff.
I want to say one thing election-oriented. Please don't turn off the radio. It's going to take 2 seconds.
Turn off the radio.
I think the Access Hollywood stuff is legit because it's creepy sexual assault talk. But I will draw the line, even as a leftist liberal, hippie, whatever,
socialist.
I think it is complete bullshit that they're digging up Howard Stern tapes to use against Trump. Like, that is clearly a comedy venue. That is clearly him playing along in that room. Like, there's been 1,000 people that have come through that room, in that studio,
yeah,
and have played into an on-air persona to kind of goof around with Howard. And I feel like that's kind of beyond the pale.
I mean, it depends on what he says in the
joke. Well, sure. The stuff about Ivanka is kind of real super creepy, but, like,
I need the context of it.
Yeah, you know? But he's making jokes on Stern.
But, like, what about the woman who got fired because she was making those weird racial jokes at Barstool?
Barstool, right.
That's, I mean, if it's like that.
But he's a private citizen. He's not working for a company that doesn't expect him to do that.
I don't know. I'm a case-by-case joke judger. Like, I'm not someone who's like, oh my god, that person made a joke about this and oh boy, let's have them lose their job. I mean, I don't know. The thing too is, like, he wasn't like making a joke in which he referenced sexual assault.
No,
he was making a joke about the time he did it,
right,
which is different. So the thing that bugs me a little bit too is sort of like, there's like a middle ground too. There's like what Trump said, which was basically joking about sexually assaulting people, and then there's like this other side of it where every athlete in every sport's like, oh, locker room talk? That's not what we talk about in locker rooms. Yeah. Like Michael Bennett and the Seahawks was like, I was born into this world by a woman, and I respect women, and that's what happens in locker rooms. Meanwhile, the guy from the Packers who came out as gay after he retired was like, life in the locker room was so fucking miserable for me,
right,
based on how, like, machismo-y it was in there, talking about women, that, like, he was so uncomfortable by it. So, like, let's not pretend like it's church in the locker room, but, like, you know, this idea that, like, every athlete's like, oh man, come in my locker room, all we do is sit around and read Little Women and talk about feminism. Like, no. No, you guys say some fucked up shit too, probably. Not at that level, obviously, but, like,
I mean, it's listen, I don't know if the same thing happens in hockey, other than a guy saying he would take his dick out for his teammate if he scored 4 goals in a game.
Right. How about the Patriots locker room in, like, the 90s when the guy, he wanted to show the woman reporter his, quote, Patriot missile?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure things have probably evolved in the last 20 years,
well,
but again, let's not act like this is the squeaky clean
He would now say SpaceX. All right.
Take out my drone missile.
5 hopes and dreams for the 2016-17 NHL season.
Hopes and dreams. I wonder if any of our hopes and dreams will overlap.
I think we have the same hopes and dreams in life, which is to get through this podcast. To get through this podcast without somebody walking in and kicking us out of the studio.
Yeah. How long do we have it reserved for?
Well, it will be quick. No.
That's what you said.
Number five. Well, they're not ranked. So no. My first hope and dream is that some playoff team we all think is cemented into a playoff seed crashes and burns. Now, unfortunately, and I'm not trying to come off as being a monster here. Unfortunately, that usually means that someone was injured catastrophically, a la Carey Price, right?
Mm-hmm.
So everybody said Montreal. People had Montreal playing for the cup last year, and Carey Price got hurt.
Yeah,
and so but at the same time, that then opened the door for the Florida Panthers' ascent. That opened the door for the Wings to challenge for a playoff spot. Like it there's a domino effect when a team everybody expects to be in the playoffs falls apart. And so I kind of want that to happen with the acknowledgement that it usually entails an horrific injury, and you probably think I'm a monster now.
Well, I mean, the Ducks could be bad just based on the Ducks being the Ducks.
I would argue they're not a team that everybody has cemented into the playoffs.
I think they do. Like I
think the teams cemented in the West are the Predators, the Blackhawks, the Blues, the Kings, the Sharks. And I think there are actually people who think the Dallas Stars could miss, which is crazy, but there are.
And then there was Duncan Keith giving shit to the woman reporter in Vancouver also. Sorry, I just flashed on that other great locker room experience for women. Sorry, go ahead, keep going.
And then there are, it was true.
Fucking sport.
And then there's the Minnesota Wild that people aren't super sold on. And I think the Anaheim Ducks are also a team that people aren't super sold on.
All right, I'm looking at the ESPN picks. Burnside, Custance, Goldstein, Kavanaugh, LeBrun. And oh, I'm reading these out of order, but six of the top seven things I'm looking at have the Ducks winning the Pacific, which to me is insane.
Winning the Pacific?
As does Barry Melrose with a photo from like 1989 as his thing. Oh my God. Oh my God. He's so young.
He's got a mustache. He's standing next to Luke Robitaille.
And Scott Powers has the Ducks. So 1, 2, 6 So
not just making the playoffs, but winning the Pacific.
Like a majority. And Burnside has the Ducks winning the cup. Sarah has the Ducks winning the cup. LeBrun has the Ducks winning the cup. Are these guys drunk? They're not going to win the cup.
Are you looking at last year's?
Yep, I am.
Yes!
Oh!
Holy shit.
Damn. Owned.
God.
Like, this is insane.
We were about to accuse the entirety of the Bristol water system being spiked with LSD.
How drunk is everybody hanging out in Bristol? Wait, so where's... I hate when you Google something and that's a top. Oh, whatever.
That's
but yeah,
should Yahoo it, friend.
Yahoo. Oh, boy.
All right, but suffice it to say, there are some people that will pick Anaheim.
Yeah.
And yeah, I guess that could qualify. All right, what's your first one, your first hope and dream?
I want the San Jose Sharks to win the Stanley Cup so Joey Thornton and Patrick Marleau can win the cup and
that's
then
beautiful.
Move on with their lives.
It's beautiful.
I don't think that needs a whole lot of explanation.
No.
Like last year, it was kind of great because Kessel versus them. Like somebody was going to get the cup and be able to shove it down people's throats.
Yeah, it's a cup.
Yeah, just want to play well. But if they don't do it this year, they're one or both of them probably going to be gone.
Right.
So it feels like the window's still kind of there. Although I know you feel like once Pete DeBoer has his first season with a new team, eventually that team the next year
the
dies.
The law of DeBoer-ishing reserve. Sorry. Returns. Thank you.
DeBoredom sets in and then the motivation. But they've still got most of the team back from last year. They added Bodker.
Mm-hmm.
West is kind of not what it was maybe a couple years ago. They're in that shitty ass division where they can easily
they could run through that thing like a wild DeBoer. But
boy, listening to you talk is like nails on a chalk DeBoer. Duh.
All right. To that end, my second hope and dream for the season is concerning Sharks East, which is that I want to see Alex Ovechkin play for a championship. I don't care if it's for the cup or for the conference. I want to see him play for a championship.
Get out of the second round, basically.
Yeah, like when they hired Barry Trotz, they hired a coach with NHL experience, which is a really big thing for Alex. He never had one before. Now I'd like to see this team play for a championship. And I have them playing for the cup with the caveat that the only way it's going to happen is if they don't play the Penguins in the playoffs. And the only way they can avoid that is by winning the division or finishing second and then hoping that someone takes out the Penguins before they have to play them.
Like the Islanders or somebody.
Yeah.
I think they could. I mean, like last year, Holpe was weirdly bad in that series. And that was like the one spot where they had the advantage was Holpe over Murray. But Matt Murray was just...
I know what you're saying, but I hope he's never going to be the problem in any playoff series they play in.
Kind of wasn't that one.
But it's three
of the four losses, he was bad.
Yeah, but their secondary scoring, they're scoring.
Oh, sure. Yeah. It was more than that. Like Kuznetsov disappeared. But like I think as long as, even with Kuznetsov disappearing, they were still pretty much in all those games. But like Holpe was just, I still remember the game winning goal in overtime where like he's a guy who is so steady in net. Like it's like he's unconscious. Like the puck just hits him. He doesn't really move. He's always in great position and he's super athletic and all that. But like he's always so calm. And on that winning goal, like he was just swimming around on the net. Like he was like Mike Richter in the 1994 like playoffs or something. It was really, really was so uncharacteristic of him. So I don't know. I think if he's like your solid 925, 930 goalie, even if the Penguins are better in most areas, I think he can be the difference. But yeah, I'd like to just see Ovechkin not have to deal with stuff where he gets blamed, even though Kuznetsov had 1 point in 14 games or whatever it was.
Right.
So yeah, I like your dream. I share your dream.
Oh, a shared dream. This is not going to be a shared dream because you dislike fighting. I would like to see...
Is it my turn?
Oh, is it your turn?
I mean, how many dreams are you going to put on me today?
Go. I'm sorry.
God. All right. So your dreams feel more serious than mine. My dreams feel more whimsical and dreamlike. Mm-hmm. So my next dream is that somebody at an Islander game tries to steal the SUV. And I say tries because there's no way they're going to be able to get it off the thing and drive it through like the Zamboni doorway because when they do it, they're going to be drunk and they're not going to be able to start the car properly. But just get that stupid fucking thing away from the glass, please, while I'm watching a hockey game. I want to not be reminded of the fact that like you're trying to sell me an SUV during the course of a hockey game. So I really want to see like a dude... Like some dude in like an old school like fish sticks jersey with like, I don't know.
Patrick Flatley.
Pekka on the back. Yeah, like Patrick Flatley on the back. That'd be awesome. Just like stumble in like it's like, where'd he go, folks? I think I just saw a guy. And he's like underneath the thing like hot wiring it like he's Ben Affleck and the accountant. I assume he steals a car and that uses his mental ability to steal a car. And then like he gets it like halfway off the podium. So like the back tires are still on the pedestal and like he's drunk in there waving at people. So that's my dream. I want to see that car vandalized in some way this season. Unless that makes me liable if it happens, then I don't want to see that happen.
You're probably not going to like this one, Dave, because you don't like fighting all that much. But
what is it?
Listen, the fighting is decreasing. I've long said that fighting will leave the game on its own at its own pace. You don't need to be draconian to make rules to get it out of the game necessarily. I want to see one big benches clearing brawl, like a real Donnybrook, like a Canucks Blackhawks line brawl type thing, because one, it's fun as shit, and two, because then it sets up the next game.
You're such a Neanderthal.
You could establish yourself a little rivalry going forward.
You're such a caveman.
Just a real benches clearing brawl that sparks a rivalry between two teams.
You ever see the brawl that happened in the NHL the day the 1980 U.S. Olympic team won gold?
Because
they played hockey then. It was the old school way, and it was, I want to say, Vancouver, Philly. And it's the most amazing 9 minutes on YouTube you can watch, because it's like you said, it's like everybody, it's like, this is back when guys came off the bench. It's the most unbelievable. Like, I wanted to do like an oral history on it, because like everyone thinks about that day as the U.S. Olympic day, because every fucking year Mike Arruzzi has got to come out and get his goddamn fucking paycheck. But it's seriously, go on YouTube and Google it. I just Google like the date of whatever we won. We beat Russia.
It was in 1980, I think, right?
Yeah, 1980. I think it was in 1980. I think, you know what? I think as history tells us, even though we beat the Soviets, I think we had to win another game to get gold.
It's winter, like, probably, right? Yeah.
I think so. I forget where they held it. I think, I don't know.
Loch Ness, I believe. Oh, wait, no, Lake Placid, the other monster.
Right, that's Betty White's hometown we held it in. And Betty White was actually on hand... And was rumored to be having an affair with her, Brooks. I don't know if you know
that. Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Remember that speech she gave the team before the game? She's like, when I was living in St. Olaf.
And then people don't know this, but Oliver Platt was actually the assistant coach next to the guy from The Truman Show.
The guy from The Truman Show.
Whatever that guy's name was.
Yeah, that guy.
All right. My next dream, a little more realistic. I want Devin Setoguchi to score 30 goals this year.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Now, Devin Setoguchi out of hockey, well, out of the NHL for two seasons, back now with the LA Kings. He made the team at a camp, and you would like to see him score 30 goals.
30 goals.
Season.
I want him to play alongside Andre Kopitar and just bury. I want him to shoot like 24% this year. I just want everything to go in. I like that guy. He was always good to talk to after Sharks games back in the day. Seems like a decent enough.
I love the fact the Sharks hate the Kings, and now you have Setoguchi back, and the fact that he's wearing like the black jersey. It's like seeing Picard become a member of the Borg.
Yeah, like wouldn't that be awesome if like the Kings beat the Sharks in like Game 7 and Setoguchi had like 3 goals on Martin Jones?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Oh yeah.
I share your dream,
see?
Sir.
This is a good dream, and like he's a good story too. I actually wanted my original dream was going to be Josh Harding. I didn't realize he actually unofficially retired.
Yeah, he retired. Yeah.
So I was kind of hoping I wanted to come back, but apparently,
my God, that's Ryan Clough's music.
Setoguchi just puts Joe Thornton through a wall or something. I don't know. I'm rooting for that guy.
Setoguchi rips off Joe Thornton's necklace on Piper's Pit, and then they wrestle in WrestleMania 3.
Piper's Pit. What was better, Piper's Pit or Kiner's Corner?
What was better, Piper's Pit, Kiner's Corner, or the Brother Love Show? Remember the Brother Love Show?
I love you.
They make the whole ring pink, and he'd come out.
It's a weird time.
What a weird time. Well, it was like a response to like Jimmy Swaggart and like the preachers on TV.
Yeah, because right, like they always reflect what's going on in the world.
Yeah,
and that's why we have, I don't know what goes on in wrestling.
That's why we had Sergeant Slaughter join the Iraqi military at one point. That was the thing that happened in wrestling.
The Iron Sheik.
Yeah. My fourth wish, hope, dream for this season, that this is the last year for the current incarnation of the NBC studio show. You know, CBC, our friends CBC up in Canada, our friends Sportsnet up in Canada, they've put all their commentators in a big blender this year, and they have all new configurations. They've got new people in, old people out, that whole thing. Mike Milbury and Keith Jones and Jeremy Roenick, to a lesser extent, have been our voices on American television for hockey since the 05 lockout.
Boy, that's depressing when you say it out loud.
But it's the truth. And... like, I think Jones does a fine job. I think Milbury doesn't do a fine job.
Does the opposite of
that.
I
think Roenick is miscast in that job. One of the best things I heard in the offseason was that Scott Gomez is joining NHL Network as an analyst.
Why? You don't know how good he's going to be.
Well,
you never
I don't, but I'm interested to see it. Because since 2005, we've had a lot of people retire who maybe should get a shot on television rather than the same people that have been there for over a decade.
Well, like Marty Biron got a chance, but he's too good to slum it at NBC, so he goes up to Canada.
Yeah.
And he gets all the money. That's the thing, is like all the guys who are good don't come, like NBC's not most people's first stop on the I want to be a TV person.
But there's
tour.
But that's the thing though, is that in Canada you have two networks. So there is a reason to be good. Because you have to beat the other guy.
Yeah.
In the United States, there's one network and they never have to be good. Because they're just competing against nobody.
Nothing.
So you could have the same guys that you have on the show every single year because you like them.
Pang. He's out there, right?
Pang would be great.
Well, no, he does.
But I like
St.
him
Louis
more between
blues.
The benches.
Yeah, he does.
See,
blues fall.
You need
season,
to
though.
Find studio guys. And I know everybody fell in love with Brett Hull during the World Cup on ESPN. I still say that that's a very specific thing he was good at, which is bitching about Team USA. I wouldn't necessarily want him on NBCSN.
I'm
but
only
there have
him
to
a
be
try.
People out there you can move into the studio instead of these guys. I'm a little. It's time to change the conversation.
But like you watch football as much as I do. Like think about football. There's 32 teams, so there's 16 games a week. So you need 16 booths. You got to find 16 people that are good at that job.
I'm just talking
and
about
like
studio
three
show.
Are the, that's what I mean, though, is like hockey for a studio show, you can get
anybody
you want.
Yeah, you're right.
You don't really necessarily have to have one specific guy and one play-by-play guy. You can have whatever mix you want.
And even though Fox has had Bradshaw and Jimmy Johnson on that show for like since the dawn of time, it seems.
Oh.
Like they on CBS, they swapped out Marino. They make changes.
Yeah.
It's okay to make changes.
But those shows are bad.
Yeah, it's
a bunch of and like also, like, did you watch the Cubs game last night?
I did not.
Like the post game, I mean, as far as post game shows go, holy shit. So you have Kevin Burkhart, who's awesome and really good at what he does. And he's talking to A-Rod, Frank Thomas, and Pete Rose. And it's just dog shit. It's not good. It's bad TV. And like TBS has a guy hosting the show. I have no idea who he is, but I keep saying he looks like the dude from Horrible Bosses, who's in the original one, who's at the bar and is willing to give out hand jobs in the bathroom for $20. He looks like that guy. That's what he reminds me of. So they have him. They have Pedro, who's doing the whooping Indian thing. I mean, like TV, sports TV sucks. And I think a big problem is that they keep using retired athletes who have no. But at the same time,
that's the obsession,
like, right? Yeah. But like Fox was using Verducci in the booth, and he's like a guy who's a columnist who seems like he's afraid to be critical of people. So like, if you were to go that route in hockey, like say if you were to be like, hey, we're gonna put Scott Burnside in the booth to call games on NBC or be the studio guy,
yeah,
like sometimes those people are afraid to say, you know, that was a bad call, that was a bad decision, that coach should be fired, because they don't want to upset their friends, they don't want to burn sources. There's no good way to do it. So my solution is, don't watch TV anymore. Boy, that was a long time on your dream for me to destroy it. Sorry about that.
You destroyed it.
All right, here's dream number four. Dave's dream number four. All the outdoor games get canceled because of bad weather. There's no way to make them up the next day or later in the day. And the NHL loses tons of money. And it's hilarious and it's great, because I'm sick and fucking tired of having to pretend these games that are worth 2 points are worth anything more than any other regular season.
So you literally want to see Storm or Mr. Freeze and hire them to take out these winter classic and outdoor games.
Because think about it. It's very much like robbing the banks in Point Break,
mm-hmm.
because the people will all get their money back. Their tickets are quote unquote sort of insured,
right,
the way the bank's money is. The only people that will get hurt are the people that are trying to suck all this extra money out of people to go watch a stupid game from really, really far away. And I just think it would be great. I just think I don't even know how many there are this year. There's the opening. There's one in Toronto.
We have the one in Toronto, the one in St. Louis, the one in Winnipeg.
Oh, there's one in Toronto and Winnipeg this year.
Yep. And then we have the one between the Penguins and Flyers in Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh. And plus, like for Twitter, I don't want to hear about. I don't want to hear the same 40 quotes from the same people that are all at the same event. Oh, sounds like Hutchinson's going to get the start for Winnipeg today.
Uh-oh, yo. I was at the practice today at like noon. The sun was beating down on the ice. I don't know if we're going to have a game tomorrow.
I can't do it. I think it would just be great to just watch the NHL like panic.
My number one hope and dream for this season is I want to get Connor McDavid in the playoffs by any means necessary. And I say that because I would like...
Maybe murder.
Maybe some level of subterfuge, some like pirate kidnappings.
Wow.
So
murder.
That's
going to be murder. Just come down and say it.
I'd like American fans to be able to see Connor McDavid, considering NBC doesn't have him on at all this year.
Yeah.
So Connor McDavid in the playoffs. I actually had the Oilers missing the cut, but like last weekend kind of style. I think the Flames get in and they don't.
Yeah, the Flames will get in before they do.
Yeah, but I would love if McDavid could get in the playoffs.
That division, but that division's so bad though. Where like,
how bad is it?
It's so bad, Mikey. No, it's like if let's say Kopitar gets hurt on the second game of the season and he misses 4 months, it's open. It's wide open. Yeah. Anyone can come.
That would be my first dream.
Yes.
Someone cemented
a catastrophic injury.
Catastrophic injury, right. Yeah, exactly.
In which the emotional scarring and pain won't leave that person's body, right, as long as Greg's happy about his dream.
Right. Just make sure, remember, when you're a playoff team and your best player gets hurt, just picture me with flames around me, just cackling.
Flames.
On the side of my face.
On the side of my
breathing,
face.
Breathing, breathless, heaving. Did you see that they're going to try to turn Clue into a stage play?
Yeah, that's great. Good. Another thing we can recycle.
And your final dream, sir?
And also, I've had a lot of women reporters tell me that guys like to use the PR guys to try to get their phone numbers. So, yeah, the locker room is great. Great environment for... Sorry.
where did that come from?
I just want to keep going back to that idea that every athlete wants to make it seem like the locker room is the greatest place ever and they respect women, when most of them probably do not. Where am I? Oh, here it is. At the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Stanley Cup final.
Mm-hmm.
There's always that Gary Bettman state of the blah, 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 where he comes out and pretends like nobody wants to hear about salaries. Nobody wants cap geek. Nobody wants gambling.
Right.
Gary Bettman retires at the end of the season.
Whoa.
And we bring in somebody new and we can finally see what the NHL could be with somebody else leading it, because I'm tired of hearing about how much revenue has happened under Gary Bettman when all of it's kind of just sort of been there anyway.
Wow.
Gary Bettman didn't invent the internet. He didn't invent streaming services. He would have had whatever GM, whatever commissioner was there, would have had a TV deal with Canadian networks. He would have probably had a better, smarter deal with the US networks. Mm-hmm. I want to start fresh. I want no Bill Daly. I want no Gary Bettman. Don Fear should probably get lost too, based on the fact that the CBA is a joke too for any player that's under the age of 25 and wants to get paid fairly.
Mm-hmm.
But that's dream six. That's the bonus dream. That's the dream when you wake up and you can't tell if it's a dream or a reality. I want someone else to run the league, and I just want to see, because I go back to this. I think we might have talked about this. I know I wrote about it once, and this is a weird comparison, but the professional bowling league was, nobody watched it because it's bowling and it sucks. And there was a dude in the league, one of the Webbers, and he was like a crazy guy. He kind of had his own issues, like with substance abuse and stuff. But like they sold the PBA, and the old PBA was like, dude, stop crotch chopping. Stop hooting and hollering. This is bowling.
Yeah,
this is
bowling.
And then the new people were like, dude, chop your crotch. Go crazy. Get out there. And like revenues tripled. Fans poured in, like relatively speaking, to bowling.
So
and
you don't
and believe I think that could happen in hockey.
The stewardship of the game needs to change.
Yes. Like there needs to be a new...
Do you have anybody in mind for like who...
Sean Leahy.
Fuck that, his own Sean Leahy?
I think Sean Leahy's got a nice balance of seriousness and jokeability that could bring out a new flavor from the National Hockey League. No, I don't know.
Mr.
Don't
Commissioner,
know.
Do you mind if we celebrate after goals? I'd do what you want. It's fine.
That John Collins fella, he had some ideas, didn't he? He had some thoughts about the game that seemed to be pretty decent for for an old
rich white guy. He's no longer there.
It's just I'm tired. I mean, we need something new, man. I'm tired of the same. We'll look at the PK Subban quote later, but
top three replacements for Gary Bettman: Condoleezza Rice.
Oh my God, murderer. What else? What else?
Brendan Shanahan,
Donald Trump,
and. I don't know.
I don't know about Shanahan. Shanahan would probably be better, but he would probably be still sort of same in that old school kind of. Ooh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
All right, listen. We have an amazing guest on the show if you've stuck with us for this long. He's actor John C. McGinley.
John C. McGinley, baby.
You know him from Office Space. You know him from Point Break. You know him from his new show, Stand Against Evil on IFC. And we talked to him about a great many things, including his being in...
Platoon,
but being in the Malibu mob with Chris Chelios.
Oh, he tells a very good story about what would happen hypothetically if you were to, say, leave the Stanley Cup on the beach.
Yes, indeed. All right, here's John C. McGinley. John C. McGinley is in Stand Against Evil on IFC. He fights an assortment of demons as a local sheriff. But obviously, our first question is about another immortal creature. How does one become best friends with Chris Chelios?
We were neighbors in Malibu, and as a denizen of Malibu, there was a tiny group of us, maybe about a dozen, who still work out together and eat together and pick on each other, and that became the Malibu mob. And the Malibu mob really was a glorified dinner group. But it was populated by Johnny Mack, Chris Chelios, Tony Danza was out there for a long time, Laird, Gabby, Johnny Cusack, D.B. Sweeney, myself, and Don Wildman. And so that was about it.
So you guys played hockey, I'm assuming, a lot together.
D.B. was our hockey guy, but no, we didn't play hockey. We went to see Chelly whenever he was out playing the Ducks and or the Kings, and then a couple of times of those great... Great Western Division championship rounds when they would go up to San Jose for those brutal shark battles. We went up there a couple times. The greatest hockey game I ever saw was the Wings and the Sharks. I think it was a game five, and the Wings were down 1-0 up in that arena, which is unbelievable. It's so vertical. And they came back and won 2-1. It was unbelievable.
But being close with Chelios at that point in his career is probably like being like in with like one of the Stones.
I agree.
You know what I mean? Like that team was so good. He was so good. It's not like you're hanging out with the Atlanta Thrashers at that point.
No. And Chelly used to call. You know, he was a right defenseman, and so he used to call. About from 2 o'clock to the goal facing out. He used to call that his office. And so Cusack and I would go when they were down in Anaheim or in Los Angeles, and we'd stand behind the glass and just scream bloody murder. And twice we were kicked out of the Los Angeles arena, Staples and wherever they played the Forum before. A guy tapped on Johnny and told him he couldn't cheer like that, and they kicked us out of the arena.
Wait.
We took it. He said either go back to your seat or stop doing what you're doing. And, you know, Johnny doesn't do well with authority. And so
But they knew who you were, right? They didn't just.
We were no good Irish mutts. We were just Celli fanatics. You don't understand how much we love Celli.
Wow. So what was it like when you abandoned the Rangers to become this celebrity hockey fan where you just love Chelios? Did it hurt to just give up this original six team in the city?
No, because Mess had delivered the cup, and this was post-Messier.
Okay.
And it's, I guess a couple years ago, we had a good run, but we, like I'm a Ranger.
That's allowed here.
Yeah. I've been out there now on the West Coast for about 25 years, and sooner or later, you got to surrender a little bit.
That's what happens. Kevin Smith did the same thing.
He's Kevin Smith gave up the Devils for the Oilers. Yeah. There's a lot of guys that
Kings.
Do that.
Makes
yeah.
sense. I get it because you're out there. Get good seats. Good yeah. team.
I mean, when I had a little juice with 42, the Jackie Robinson movie a couple of years ago, you know, you become a de facto Dodger fan because the Dodger organization's being super, super supportive of the movie. And you're going to all these Dodger games and all of a sudden you're meeting a Clayton Kershaw who's one of the most unbelievable athletes I've ever met. So you start, you know, as soon as you have a vested interest in a personality or a person, it makes it twice as fun.
You've done sports movies, but only baseball, I want to say? Have you been in other sports genre?
Let's see. Summer Catch was with Freddie Prinze. That Prinze, was about yeah. the Cape Cod League.
Right.
Getting
laid in the Cape Cod League.
I have a great story, not about getting laid, but I got to meet Hank Aaron when we were doing that.
Shut up!
And he came in. We were down towards North Carolina shooting the film, and I played a scout, and Hank came up from Muscle Shoals, which is Alabama, which is where his mother lives. Uh-huh. And for 2-3 hours, Hank Aaron and I were just pointing speed guns at in the film, just pointing our jugs guns at the field and talking baseball. And I got to talk to Hank Aaron.
It makes you mental, the Bonds thing happened. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It just makes you mental to think about how Aaron did it, when he did it, having to deal with what he dealt with when he
did it. No question.
And then have just people kind of usurp him with
and be one of the class A Southern gentlemen of all time.
Yeah.
And so I got to spend a couple hours with Hank Aaron. But I also did any given Sunday with Oliver.
Oh, that's right.
He played a sports writer.
That's right.
One of us.
Yeah, what was that like? What was your researcher to be playing a sports writer?
Jim Rome was nice enough to let me hang out with him for a couple weeks. And then I wanted to combine Jim Rome's sensibilities, which was kind of what Oliver was talking about in the film,
right,
with kind of a Lenny Bruce jabber, just a guy who's constantly just giving you jabs.
Oh, yeah.
And so I went to the Museum of Broadcast out in Beverly Hills there. There's one in New York here, too. And I watched a bunch of Lenny Bruce stuff, and that was the flavor I was coming up with.
That was brilliant. You work with Stone 3 times or 4 times? 6 times?
Yeah, baby.
So, but you worked in prime time Stone realist. Like, we're talking Platoon, we're talking Wall Street.
Right, and Talk Radio. They did the play here at the Public.
Right, Talk Radio. God, that was
the story
brilliant.
About how Platoon happened was kind of crazy. You were just working as an understudy, and he was like, give me that
Well,
guy.
Sort of. I went into audition for Platoon in 1984 when I was understudying John Turturro and Danny in the Deep Blue Sea, which was written by the guy who had won an Academy Award for Moonstruck, John Shanley. And I went in and I got third guy on the left in Platoon, which was to go in Mexico at the end of the year. And then the funding fell out. 2 years later, cut to 1986, I'm playing 6 parts in Kevin Kline's first Hamlet down at the Public and understudying Laertes. And so we were 2 weeks, and obviously Laertes has the great sword fight at the end of the play. And so we were 2 weeks into combat class with the weapons, and Oliver calls and says, McGinley, I want you to play Sergeant O'Neill. And I'm like, well, I'm sorry, who is this? I'm with Kevin Kline at the Public.
Can I call you back?
It was the, can I call you back? And so I got Sergeant O'Neill, and which is the fourth lead in the movie. And so I had to go in to meet with Joe Papp, who's like Johnny Friendly and on the waterfront. No actor in their right mind in New York City would burn that bridge of getting into that fraternity slash sorority
right.
down at the Shakespeare Festival.
Right.
Because it's a tiny group that Joe used to put in everything. You
yeah.
know, if there was 75 of you, there was 50 of you.
Right.
And so I went in to meet Joe Papp. Mr. Papp, and it was tantamount to going in to see the Wizard in the Wizard of Oz, because you know they're down in at Astor Place there, and he was behind these big doors, and the connective tissue there was Rosemary Tischler, who was the casting person and a goddess and really good to me. And I go, Rosemary, I just got offered to lead in a movie. I got to go ask Mr. Papa if I can get out. And she goes, okay, go ahead. And I went in, and he's, you know, he's an old school, you know, he always had a burner, and he was just like, Mac. And I'm like, he knows my fucking name. He goes, what can I do for you? And I said, well, I got a lead in a movie with Oliver Stone. He goes, I know Ollie. Tell him I say hello. Do you got to go? And I'm like, well, only if it's not going to disrupt what we have. And he said, well, I tell you what, we'll do Hamlet again. You can be in it. Go ahead. And in other words, all was forgiven. Oh. And he would, in fact, he was good to his word. He let me be in talk radio 4 years later, which originated at the Public with Eric Bogosian. And if he had said, if you go, you don't work here again, I wouldn't have gone.
Wow.
Neither would any actor in New York. And so as soon as he said, you can go, there was a revolution in the Philippines, and we sat for 8 months.
Right.
And I used to see Defoe down in Soho, and he'd go like, Johnny C., we're truly fogged. And you're like, we're, you know, and selfishly, just as actor boys, we're like, could you get the revolution over? And so the play opens. It's the Vincent Canby called it the most important Hamlet on these shores. Wow. And I lived in a funeral parlor on Sullivan Street. And I'm just like, great. This is great. I'm the biggest fucking loser on the planet, man.
So when you're in a platoon or a Wall Street, right?
What a loser.
And then you're in an office space. Like, do you have any concept of how these things are going to play or are going to be remembered while you're, like, I figure you make a platoon, you figure something special's happening here, right?
Yeah, but it's a really, really good question about platoon, because when we were making it, it was very special, mm-hmm. because Oliver shot it in sequence, which mm-hmm. is unheard of. Mm-hmm. So as you died, your character died, you left. And so that makes it much easier for the actors not to take that large of an imaginary leap, because people are leaving and there's only a couple of us left in revolution-torn Manila.
Right.
Trying to act like you're in Southeast Asia. And so it's not that big of a leap.
Right.
So what you do in front of the lens is pretty authentic.
Because you've been in the shit, as they say.
Yes, and people are gone.
Right.
People who died, characters died, have left.
Off your mortal plane at that point.
Yes. Yeah. And so it was really special. And so when we got back, the way that was initially invalidated is that the monster Reagan war hit of that time was Top Gun.
Right.
Yeah.
Which had nothing to do tone-wise with what we made a love story about brothers dying.
Platoon needed a volleyball scene, I think.
Can you imagine?
That would have made that movie something.
The closest thing it had was that card game, and that's it. So the answer is no. Yeah. And then before the Academy Award pushes, now they're always at the end of December when all the important films are released at the end of the year. Back then, that wasn't the case. And then all of a sudden, I heard it was going to be released at Christmas. And I'm like, oh, fucking great. Nothing says Christmas like Platoon. And so between Top Gun and being released at Christmas, I just figured, at least we had the experience, even though no one's ever going to see it.
That's funny. That's a straight up joke from The Naked Gun, when Leslie Nielsen and Priscilla Presley walk out of a movie theater laughing their asses off, and they pan up and you find it's Platoon.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then Office Space was a dog with fleas when it was released, because I went to the cast and crew screening, which I thought was funny as hell. Then it was released and it tanked. And the reason it tanked is because when we were growing up, people used to look in the newspaper to see what was playing at the movie theaters. Mm-hmm. And so you'd see they call it the one sheet, the advertisement for the, and in the one sheet in the newspaper is Milton, the guy who has the stapler, and he's covered in Post-its. And when you cover a person in Post-its, they look like Big Bird. And so some genius in the marketing department that looked like a Big Bird movie. Nobody went. Rated R.
Couldn't figure that one out. Like,
what a jackass.
Wait, I read this about Office Space. So you went and you auditioned to be Lumber.
Everyone did.
Right. But it turned out you were one of the Bobs. Is it true that that's all improv? It's all sort of like made up on the fly?
No. Mike put everything down on paper, and we shot that. And then he very much wanted to bring people to bring their flavor. And once we had it, what was on the page, he was very empowering and encouraging to bring, if you have some flavor, bring it. And flavor. Yeah, so I brought a ton of, I had some ideas that to make these guys more engaging than just an ancillary character in the film. I'm like, I'm going to steal this fucker.
Like, who do I thank for the line? What would you say it is you do here? Because I must say that like once a week to somebody in like customer
service. Well, I think Mike put a version of that down, but then that actor came in and he was sitting across the table and I forgot his name, but he's a great actor. And he, you know, he's telling you all these things he's doing. And I just, in the moment, I was just like, well, just let's stop for a second. And as best you can, tell me, what would you say you do here? Like I was talking to a three-year-old. And that's the one Mike put in the film.
Between that and Young, Dumb, and Full of Cum, those are my two favorite John C. McGee.
That was mine.
No, it wasn't. Was it really?
It was not Catherine's.
Anyone could come up with that, right?
No.
All those that wanted to talk, like, we wanted to do, like, 3 hours of Point Break. That's what you want.
Because he was in the good Point
Break.
Yeah,
you were in the good Point Break.
Yeah. Not the remake Point Break. Yeah. He was in the original.
But you know what's so interesting about the original Point Break is that it's an exploration of testosterone and adrenaline directed by a woman. Right. And Catherine would then go on to direct The Hurt Locker, and so it wasn't an anomaly. But I thought what was really interesting is that it's all, except for Lori Petty, who's great in the movie, all these men in being testosterone and adrenaline, and Patrick is very gifted in the movie, but Catherine directed it. And I thought that's what made it just, there was something just a little more interesting about it than it should have been. Mm-hmm. And Gary's good. And Keanu's great in that movie. I think he's great when he's a fish out of water, you know, like when he's either in The Matrix or, although John Wick, he's awfully good in John Wick.
Yeah, I want to see John Wick too. I never thought when I saw the commercial for John Wick, I would say to myself, I got to see John Wick
too. I thought it was badass.
Oh, it was so great. So funny.
It was. That was. I was talking to somebody about.
Also, he happens to be the best guy on the planet.
Yeah, he's really super nice.
Hands down.
Yeah. They got John Wick and Jack Reacher, and it's become this weird thing where, like, if these movies came out in the '80s, it'd be like Michael Dudikoff as John Wick.
You're right.
Right. And now you've got like these established stars that are now doing these genre action pieces that are. It's amazing. And I guess maybe Cruise and Keanu will be in like the Expendables reboot in like 15 years.
And now John's kicking ass in his own thing. This is a new thing though. Everyone kicks ass.
Let me before we get to Stand Against Evil, there needs to be one Scrubs question, which is, how did you negotiate to get Red Wings Chelios jerseys onto the show?
The creator of the show is named Bill Lawrence, and when you write, it used to be 22 to 24 episodes a year, which is impossible an amount of content to generate. Yeah. And so if you had anything in your real life that was remotely eccentric or interesting, it was the frick in the show. And he knew I loved Chelly. And he said, do you think Chelly would let you wear a game sweater? And I'm like, I think so, because the NHL does about 1.2 million people a game on TV. We're doing 12 million. I think the NHL would really like that.
On a previous podcast, we're talking about how excited we get when we see hockey and pop culture. Like how when I was a kid, I got excited to see like a Devil's garbage can in AJ Soprano's bedroom on The Sopranos.
Oh, that's right.
Devil's. And I got so excited. And so seeing that on Scrubs was always exciting, because it's like, here's hockey where people don't expect hockey to be. And you're putting it in front of people that might be, wow, that's the best looking sweater in sports outside of the Blackhawks. What an exciting thing to see.
Yeah. Chelly would agree as well.
Chelly would agree. Well, he can agree. He's, you know.
He doesn't like the Thrashers jersey. Chelly does look good in the Thrashers jersey. Come on.
It wasn't a good season.
How'd you find your way to Stand Against Evil?
I received the offer to play Stan, and I thought it was really funny. But for the last 15 years, since 9/11, my brothers and I and my father, who's no longer with us, but we filled in a cousin with him, have gone to Dublin to play golf and have a beer and
that's cool.
Lie about how great we used to be. And so my brother was on the 68th floor of the second building, and he got out.
Wow.
And it was a real priority focus shifter when Mark got out, and he was missing for a day. And so we said from now on, because we had gone 2 years before to Ireland, and then babies get born and you know, confirmation, and people go to – stuff happens. There's a 1 million reasons for us not to go to Dublin together for 7 days.
Right.
And so we skipped a year or two, and then Mark went missing on that morning. And when he finally showed up, we said one of the takeaways was, when we say we're going to do something as a family from now on, we're going to do it.
Gotta do it, yeah.
And so we'd had this year's trip planned to Dublin, and it was the first year we were going without Dad, and we brought our cousin John in, and then the offer came, and they said, you have to be Atlanta. You have to be in Atlanta the first week of June. And I said, I can't. And the agent was like, do you want more money? I'm like, no, the offer's great. I don't, I'm going to be in Dublin. Mm. I got to chill. And it wasn't a poker play. It was my truth. And so they said, well, this might go away. The agent said, this might go away. I said, I'm going to be in Dublin.
Yeah.
I can't. I'm not a good poker player. I'm not. Right. I'm telling you my truth.
And if it's meant to be, it's going to be there, right?
And so they moved the production 3 weeks. And as soon as they did that, for an Irish guy, I was just like, I'll now eat nails for you.
Right.
Because of what you did to accommodate my trip with my brothers,
right.
I'll now destroy Stan.
Yeah.
And so I went down to Atlanta, and I just ripped the fucking cover off the ball.
You did. I imagine episode 4 or 5 is when you actually do eat nails.
Stan's pretty rough.
It's cool. Were you a fan of the sort of Sam Raimi, Bruce Campbell-y horror comedy stuff?
I met Bruce. I did a one episode arc on Burn Notice, and I was lucky enough to work with Bruce and the guys down towards Coconut Grove where they were shooting. And so then I started to go back and watch The Reanimator and all this other stuff that Sam did and a bunch of Bruce's stuff. And they're on the same frequency. Stand Against Evil is on the same frequency as Ash versus Evil Dead. But the tone, as a producer of Stand Against Evil, the tone that we were absolutely struggling to get, and it's a hard one, is we wanted to straddle both horror, so when it's scary as shit, mm-hmm. and comedy.
Yeah.
And so where that's tricky is sometimes the comedy can invalidate the monsters. And if you invalidate the monster, there's no threat. And there has to be a threat. Like, to me, the peak of that would be An American Werewolf in London.
Yeah. Right.
So when Stan Winston was doing those masks and that those werewolves would become real.
Body horror.
Yeah.
It was horrifying.
Yeah, the fingers.
But then when they were out on the moors and there were just a bunch of jackasses lost, right. It was hilarious.
Yeah. The thing I like about this is I think it's different than the Bruce Campbell stuff is he's kind of a wise ass, but I feel like Stan's sort of a put upon curmudgeon.
Perfect.
Yeah.
100%. And I gave him the funniest, actors, sometimes I love actors and I teach actors and I try to empower them. And I'm kind of an actor geek. And so I think it's still fun to give a character an arc and to decide, where do you want to get to? What's the one thing you want to do? You may not be able to do it, but what's the one thing that character wants to do? And usually you give him a very aggressive, some verb that'll get you through all this narrative. And so what I gave Stan was to get your ass back in that chair.
Right. To be done with all this shit.
To be done with all this shit. So when everything's added up, you know where Stan wants to be? In that chair with a beer watching the History Channel. And so in subsequent issues, he gets his wish, but then his house is haunted and he's watching the History Channel, a thing on Hitler, and Hitler starts to talk to him. Because Hitler's a witch. And so Hitler starts to tell him what to do. And so it was funny on the page.
Wait, is Hitler a good witch in this scenario? Or is
no, bad.
Bad witch, okay. Because that would have been a real twist. Like
he's a bad. He's bad.
Listen, Hitler's probably not a good guy.
Let's get back to hockey for a second. One of the great, maybe urban legends, I think we're about to find out, in the history of hockey is, of course, the time when the Malamu mob allegedly left the Stanley Cup on the beach. And then, according to reports, it was then used as an ashtray. Is there anything you can help in our discovery here of trying to figure out what the real story is?
All I can tell you is that on two different beaches in Malibu, one on Malibu Road and one in Chelly's second house, the cup was on the beach twice.
Yes. Whether it was left there, we can't discern.
There's a babysitter of the cup, so it's right. Pretty,
hypothetically, not in a real world, if it was left there, what would have happened to that cup? Do you think
the tide would have washed it out? Tide's pretty unforgiving.
That is that'd be.
How about that? If it's floating, it would sink.
Right. That's like nine steps worse than it with the time it fell into Mario Lemieux's pool. I think if it floats out to sea.
I'm trying to picture Phil Pritchard in like a scuba gear.
Is Phil the protector of all things?
Phil Pritchard and Mike Bolt. Yeah, those two guys.
I've met them.
Phil's the guy in the commercial, the Discover commercials with the great hair.
Mike's a guy I could see living on the beach, to be honest.
I don't know. Mike's a fun guy, but like Mike is super, super, super anal about the cup. He wants to make sure no one touches it.
What's your drank from the cup, I imagine, or no?
Yes, we all did.
Oh my God. How is that?
Well, because of my love for Celli, him getting it, well, he was his third, right? He got his first with Montreal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's playing since 1875, so I mean,
right, so there are a few cups in there. But how about your rookie year, you come up and win the cup?
Right, yeah. With Montreal, though.
And then never not be on a playoff team.
Yeah, right?
It's a good career. You can get it.
Do you think?
Not bad.
Yes, it was sweet. It was sweet medicine coming out of that cup.
Did you lift it, or was it lifted for you?
I think it was lifted for me. I think Laird lifted it.
And this is all after 94, so you're thinking this has no effect on the team I actually like. Like,
God, what a team.
What, 94?
Come on.
Well, I'm a Devils fan. I can't put you over.
How many cups did the Devils win? Two?
The Devils have won three since 94. We worked out all right.
Sheldon Surrey got traded the year.
Yeah.
He seems like a pretty decent guy.
And he hasn't gotten one, right?
Yeah.
No, he didn't.
Or he didn't get one, yeah.
Best. He had the fastest miles per hour slap shot at that competition for years.
Yeah. In a big dude.
Big, yeah, strong big strong
dude. Yeah,
one of the best.
Hockey players are good people.
I think I figured out why.
Oh, okay.
And I think it's why baseball, the American League, could do to fix a bunch of things, is that hockey is largely a self-policing sport. Mm-hmm. And so if you pick on my guy, we're going to pick on you. Whereas in the American League in baseball, that pitcher can pick on your number one batter and never face the music because there's a designated hitter.
Right.
In hockey, if you do something, there will be a consequence. And it might be a straight-up regular man-to-man fight. It might be a cheap shot. It might be something into the boards. It might be something next time we meet next year. But it's a self-policing sport. So I think a lot of these Canadian guys who are the most first-class gentlemen in all of sports, which seems like a contradiction, but they are.
Right.
I think they get to leave it on the ice. I think they get to reconcile their accounts and then come correct.
Does that happen in like the real world too? Has Chelios ever had to like say, John, you know, maybe you shouldn't have taken my sandwich out of the fridge?
I would no sooner poke that bear.
You worked out with him?
Yeah, of course.
How? Like, I've seen videos of that cat working out, and it's like he's doing things that I haven't even, like, he's like dragging cinder blocks and shit. It's like,
well, we drag a telephone pole on the beach.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And it's, you got to do it, otherwise you're going to get heckled. And the heckling's worse than the pain.
Oh, it's fantastic. Well, I guess before, because you got a jet, Standing Against Evil, by the way, IFC, we'll give you all the details as the show goes on. But so what's your favorite hockey movie? I guess we should probably end on that.
Well, Paul, with Johnny Cusack and I got to be with Paul down in Durango, do Fat Man, Little Boy. And so when you get to be, we called him the big dog because we both hero worshipped him from everything.
Right.
Especially everything. And so I don't know if you put anything near what Paul Newman did.
So the thing about Newman in Slapshot that I always loved is that he, in every role, he had sort of that winking, the thing in his eyes where you look in his eyes, you're like, okay, the wheels are turning faster up there than they are for anybody else in this scene. But he had that sort of wild-eyed kind of crazy thing going on in Slapshot that I always really appreciated.
He was pretty special.
Yeah, he was a great dude.
For a little while, we were doing this film called Fat Man and Little Boy, which was about the making of the two bombs.
Right, yeah.
And we were down in Durango, Mexico, which is 8,000 feet up in the Sierra Madres. And where we would go to shoot from Durango was up in the Sierra Madres, which was another 3,000 feet along this road called the Highway of Death. And it was a two-lane road. And Paul let Johnny and I sit in the back of his vehicle for a couple of weeks, and he would race up the Highway of Death. And when Paramount found out about it, they some suits came down and they forbade him from driving himself to work anymore, because there was a better than even chance that he was going to drive off the side of the mountain, because he was skidding the whole way going uphill. And it was a, I don't know, a 40% grade going up this highway of death. And Johnny in the back, we're in the back just jerking off. We're so happy. This is the greatest thing ever. You know, this is the greatest 2.5 weeks of our life. We're with the big dog. He's driving us to work. And we're screaming bloody murder. And then Paramount said, and rightly so, they were just like, you can't do this. Yes. It's a huge budget film. And that was about as good as it gets.
That's awesome. Wow. John C. McGinley, you're the best. Thanks for doing the show. Yeah, any parting words for our audience?
Stand Against Evil is one of the best things I've ever done. I can't wait for everybody to see it.
And it's the balance between horror and comedy. So if you're a Leafs fan or an Oilers fan, you know about horror and comedy. So tune in.
The great John C. McGinley, ladies and gentlemen. Stand Against Evil premieres at 2 back-to-back episodes Wednesday, November 2nd, 10 p.m. and 10:30. I dug it. It's from Dana Gould, writer on The Simpsons. I dug the show. I think it's very reminiscent of sort of Sam Raimi-esque stuff and Bill, you know, Bruce Campbell stuff like the Evil Dead show.
Yeah,
and it's good.
Stuff gets murdered. Stuff bleeds. Stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really just excited to find out that John C. McGinley was the guy who coined the phrase from Point Break. I don't know why he thinks Catherine couldn't have done that line himself. She's done movies about war. I don't really care where the line came from, but the fact that he improvised it
is wonderful.
I love knowing that.
Before we get to listener mail, I wanted to read this quote from P.K. Subban. This is courtesy of Carolyn White. Carolyn Wilkie.
Greg is so mad.
All right. So this is Subban. This is from an article involving Subban. This has always been Subban, self-aware and understanding his celebrity, enthusiastic about deploying it. It's sports entertainment, he says. Hockey's still old that way. It's like we're back in Gladiators, where you're fighting for your life on the ice. No, I'm not. I plan to get off the ice, go home, have dinner, see my family. It's a game. Someone's paying $250 to watch product. To grow a sport, to grow a game, you need more fan-player interaction, and it starts first with selling players, not selling teams. Hockey has a tendency to do that. Now, I got two issues with this. The first is that it has to begin with selling teams. Hockey fundamentally is a sport where the best players, the biggest stars, are on the ice for, if you're a forward, a maximum of 22 out of 60 minutes. Maybe 23. Maybe 24.
Football's kind of close to that. It's like 30 and 30.
But that's sustained. That's different. Because if you're watching a game for Cam Newton, Cam Newton's going to be on the field for a long stretch of time. And in hockey, you're on, you're off. You're on, you're off. It's very hard to market a star when, one, they're not always on the ice. And two, when they're on the ice, it's not as apparent as if you're watching the NBA or the NFL where they are. And now you could fix that. Through technology, especially through like player tracking. Like I've always said, there should be something in these NBC games that are on the big network where they have the NASCAR arrow pointing down to the player saying, here's Patrick Kane, watch this guy.
Don't do that.
Hey, I'm just saying. I'm saying it makes it easier for the casual fan to find these players. So I disagree with that. I think fundamentally selling the teams is more important than selling the players first.
See, I go the opposite way because like I don't care about the NBA, but I will flip on Golden State, not because Golden State's good, but because Steph Curry can hit from 55 feet away and I want to watch that.
But it's the same thing I just said. Like, yeah, but I agree with you. Yeah, it's stupid to market teams in the NBA unless it's the Heat where they're like a super mega wombo Megazord team, right?
Mega super, hold on, let me type that into Google. Wombo?
But in the NHL, I think you have to market teams.
Oh, Wombo is actually a SpongeBob.
And the
NHL has
always been strongest when teams are marketed. Yeah. I mean, the reason we got out of the first lockout, the 2005 lockout, with our heads above water is because the Chicago Blackhawks team got good, and the Philadelphia Flyers team got good, and the Pittsburgh Penguins team got good, and those fans all came back.
What about baseball?
About baseball?
Well, I mean, pitchers is different because they're on the field half the time, but like, you know, superstars in baseball, they're up four times a game.
What's a superstar in baseball now?
Mike Trout, Bryce Harper.
Are you buying a ticket to see Mike Trout?
I care more about, like, I'm more the pitcher guy. Like, if someone's like Felix Hernandez is pitching or so-and-so.
And I'm the same way.
Bumgarner's pitching.
If Matt Harvey wasn't a train wreck.
Right, but
he'd be a guy that'd pay to watch.
But again, but like I think like if you sell, like think about it, we've been selling teams forever now, and game's not growing, game's not doing anything, and now you have like Connor McDavid, is so good, so fast, so talented. I think that if you know he's going to be on the ice for 21 out of the 60 minutes,
right,
you're going to watch the whole game waiting for him to come back on the ice.
I completely agree.
And he stands out so much, you're going to know who he is, even if there's not a little NASCAR deal.
I completely agree. And that's why there have been exactly three marketable players in the NHL in the last decade.
And it's the system shit, too, like that Gretzky was talking about.
Maybe four. You could make the argument Kane's marketable and that you might go to a game to see Kane if he wasn't just a deplorable human being away from the ice.
Yeah. But like, that's the thing, too. I've talked about this forever, is like, as great as Sid is, like, he's not a dude who like automatically jumps out the way he plays.
But
like, he's so smart and so good at, you know, reading plays and stuff like that.
You
like,
pay to see Sid.
Yeah.
You pay to see Alex.
I don't think
you
would.
And you pay to see Connor.
I don't.
And all due respect to PK Subban, I'm not paying to see PK Subban. I'm not.
Yeah, he's not a guy you pay to see.
I mean, if PK Subban had Erik Karlsson's skill set,
yeah,
I'd pay to see him because it'd be showmanship on top of undeniable once in a lifetime skill.
So you're
saying that there are exactly three guys in the last 10 years that Subban's talking about. And it has nothing to do with marketing. It has to do with I had this discussion with Sarah Spain the other day, actually, on her podcast.
Sarah Spain.
Yeah, I love Sarah Spain. The players that transcend the NHL are the ones that, like you said, you can look at and say, look how he's skating. That's such and such. Look at that guy. It's clearly Ovechkin. Look at that guy. It's clearly Pavel Bure. Look at that guy. That's clearly Sergei Fedorov.
You don't think there's more than three, though? I think there's more than three.
I think right now it's three, and I think going back a ways, like, due respect to Joe Sakic and Mike Modano, did they ever move the needle? Their teams did.
Mike Modano was a pretty fun
But did you
to
ever
watch.
Buy a ticket to see Mike Modano back in the day?
Yeah.
If he was coming to town.
But
that's the thing. There are guys that are, like what Subban said, that you can sell. And then there are guys that are just really good players. John Tavares, really good player, but his team needs to be something that I want to pay to see.
See, that's the thing. Is like, I think if I'm doing this mentally here, how many guys do I think... Wait, what?
I was going to say, if you were doing it mentally, I'm trying to think exactly what you'd be doing.
Well, no, I'm not like looking at a sheet of paper with a bunch of dudes who I would like. Like, okay, so you have...
I'm doing this spiritually.
Crosby.
I'm contacting
Crosby,
Gaia.
Ovechkin.
Mm-hmm.
Karlsson.
Connor.
Connor McDavid. Austin Matthews might be that guy too, based on
Eichel.
The World Cup. Kessel. Kessel's a dude who got so undersold in Toronto. Like, Kessel should have been a dude. He's a stocky fat man. He's like Costanza, but he just skates really fast and is awesome. Like,
sure.
Why would you not pay to want to watch that? I think there's a lot more guys in that than you think.
Mm.
Like to me, like, again, I go back to Crosby. I feel like he's not a dude who like stands out. I think that's a reason why people don't give him the respect they do. Like, fans hate him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think fans hate LeBron James that much because he's so awesome and obviously better than everybody else.
I'm just saying fundamentally.
Kopitar's not a guy like that, but he's great. Sagan. How about Sagan?
Fundamentally,
Ben.
The sport has people coming on and off the ice way too often. And fundamentally, the sport is about defense. And that's the issue.
Well, now it is. That's the other thing. That goes back to the system thing. Like,
yeah.
If it was just a free-flowing Team North America game everybody played where the coaches were like, fuck it, go out there and play some hockey. I think that would make it better along with... I think there's like a middle ground here where like the team stuff isn't always going to work because even good teams are the 94-95 Devils, for instance. I mean, you think you could be familiar with that team. Very good.
Yeah.
Boring as balls.
Right.
The Gitmo torture team to watch on the ice, but they won, so you liked it, but the other 20, whatever it was,
but
22
they actually,
fan bases
but they had a star on that team, but the problem is he's a defensive player.
And that is Sean Chambers.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. not Chevy goalie that broke all the records.
All right, the other thing, too, is like goalies are all technical and they're not athletic anymore, really, so it's like, I get why fans are drawn to Jonathan Quick.
Or because, Tim Thomas.
Right,
Tim Thomas might have been the last guy that actually broke through as a goalie because... of the way he played and Hasek before him.
Like Hasek, same way. But like Braden Holtby's never going to like, you know, like he does. The thing is, like, if you're technically sound and you're huge, you're not going to make highlight film saves because you're always having the puck hit you square in the chest. It's just, I don't know.
Now,
I get what Subban's saying. I get what you're saying. But I just think until like the culture changes and people can just, you know, then again, I don't want to have like, too many people speaking their minds because people are like Tom Sestito are stupid. This is the new Tom Sestito podcast in which I find new ways to reference
Tom
Sestito.
You're saying it's better not to know everything about these guys?
No, I mean, it's not that I want to know everything about them. It's just like after a game, I would just love for a dude to be excited about something he did on the ice and not have to deflect away because he's afraid that he's going to get, you know, become an outcast in his locker room.
That brings us back to this other part of the quote that I wanted to talk about. And hockey's still old that way. It's like we're back in Gladiators where you're fighting for your life on the ice. Now, I know he's not directly saying this, but this is what I'm taking away from it. As a fan, I want them to take it seriously, and I want there to be stakes. Because as a fan, and this is the majority of fans, it's serious to you. What your favorite team does, and we're jaded about this because we're in the business.
Sure.
But what your I'm not. Well, I think, okay, let me say this. We're jaded about hockey in that way because we're in the business, but I'm very still much that way about the Jets. And when the Jets are doing terribly, as they are now, I'm a fucking wreck. I hate life.
I can't believe how bad they've gotten.
They're so bad.
That first week they lost, I was like, they lost that game, but they'll be 3-2.
No, and then when they lost that game, I said, that game's, you see, it's changed from they lose that game with the Bengals, and then I'm like, oh, at the end of the season, we're going to look back at the game and be like, well, that's why we didn't make the playoffs. But now it's like, now it's just tire fire.
The fact that they were down 28-0 to the Cowboys this Sunday makes you realize that Bengals game wasn't that good of a loss.
But I think about that, and I think about, yeah, I want you guys to take it seriously, and I want my hockey to feel like it's life or death.
Wait, give me the quote again where I don't think he's not taking it seriously.
Hockey's still old that way. It's like we're back in Gladiators where you're fighting for your life on the ice. No, I'm not. I plan to get off the ice, go home, have dinner, and see my family. It's a game. I know what he's saying, and I know he's not trying to downplay the importance of what he's doing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I know, like I said in the first segment, like I know we disagree about fighting in a lot of ways, but like when there was more of it, it did feel a bit more life or death. When teams were literally tearing each other apart to get to the playoffs and then tearing each other apart in the playoffs. Granted, this is a recency bias because when I was a kid, this is the way hockey was, and there's a certain amount of nostalgia there. But like it felt more life or death 15 years ago than it does today, doesn't it? Or didn't it?
I mean, like back then, I don't think I was really aware of how like staged and bullshitty the fights were, you know?
Yeah, it could be that. I'm not downplaying the idea that I could be full of shit here because I was, you know, I didn't realize wrestling was fake.
Until like 2 weeks ago.
Until like 2 weeks ago.
Holy shit. Wait, Goldust really wasn't blowing gold dust into that guy's eyes?
I think I've mentioned this on the show before. When I realized wrestling was fake was when Hacksaw Jim Duggan and the Iron Sheik got stopped on the Jersey Turnpike with pot in their car. Yeah. It was like, pulling back the curtain for me.
Like finding out like Nick Lidstrom and Duncan Keith own a restaurant together or something.
Right.
That's like the modern version of that. I mean, just because P.K. Subban, but like it's hard for me to figure out that quote without hearing it and what the question was. But like I understand what he's saying, where it's like he's not going to take losses home with him, which I think is good.
Sure. I'm not saying he doesn't take it seriously.
Right.
I mean, so, that's something Mark Bergevin would probably say, but not me.
Right, because you're not an idiot like Mark Bergevin.
Right.
I don't need to see the thing that I always remember from back when I was a kid before we got into the business.
Mm-hmm.
I always think of how at the end of every single fucking play that involved a goalie covering the puck, there was like 45 seconds of dudes face washing and pushing and shoving. Yeah. That to me was never a sign of like, oh, these guys really want it. This to me, it was like a sign of like, can we please fucking move the game along here, please? I get it. You guys are all tough. Don't come near the goalie. Like, I don't feel like guys want it any less. Like, I don't know, man. You go into a locker room after a team loses the Stanley Cup final, you really kind of appreciate that. Like, I feel like if, let's say Nashville loses to the Caps in the Cup final this year, you go into the Predators locker room, P.K. Subban's probably going to be the most devastated guy in the room.
Right.
I don't think his quote has anything to do with willingness or desire to win a cup. You biased hater, you.
Right. That's me. All right. In the time remaining we have in the show today, let's do a little bit of listener mail.
Yeah, because we kind of did like a double preview because last week we had a show on Wednesday, and now today we're doing a thing on Wednesday when the season starts.
Sure.
So double up on the questions.
All right.
Fire away.
Here we go. The first question is...
Is Harambe a sandwich?
Better. Should I dress as Ken Bone for Halloween? The answer, Kyle Wilkins, is no. The answer is you should never dress like a fleeting meme for Halloween unless... you're dressing up a pet in a fleeting meme for Halloween.
I saw someone I follow on Twitter, and I forget her name because I just started following her. She had a really funny tweet about she had a Venn diagram with like Wolf of Wall Street and Werewolf Bar Mitzvah. Did you see that?
No.
It was funny. But like she tweeted a thing where it was like her ideal Halloween costume, and it was like 11 from Stranger Things. But then she turned it into Ocean's 11, where she put a shark on her head.
See, that's great.
And then there was another one, 7-Eleven, where she's holding a big gulp.
That's
like,
fun.
Like that to me is like topical, but it's clever.
Meme mashups.
If you just wear a red sweater and put basically Ken Bone is the guy from Office Space who takes the specs from the customers
right.
to the engineers. Like
right.
I don't know. It's not distinctive enough to just be a heavy set man with a mustache and a red sweater.
But that's the one thing that makes me really happy is that for fatties, there's not a lot of costumes you can go with that are going to get a nice, fun reaction at a party. It's basically Mario from Super Mario Brothers.
Chris Farley from like Chris a sketch Farley from SNL that no one's going to get.
Yeah, exactly.
El Nino.
Right, yeah.
Well, that's true.
And then Ken Bone kind of made life safe for a guy who looks like Ken Bone.
But like, why not like go as like, I don't know, like when you're bald, you can't go as like bald so-and-so. No one's going to get it. But you can go as like a bald, heavier, or like a heavy version of like Zach Galifianakis or something,
and,
right?
And to go with what you just said, by the way, zombie Ken Bone, perfect.
Oh, okay.
Perfect.
So instead of zombie Ken Bone, could we do like Ken Bone, where a guy is dressed as a Ken doll and he's got a boner? No, wait, what would that one be?
There's going to be a racist Ken Bone Thugs in Harmony party.
What other bones are there? Wait, Ken Bone.
How about Ken Bone as a chef and a Ken Bone Appetit?
Oh, how about you dress as Ken Bone wearing a Tim Duncan jersey?
Yes.
And you're a bone spur.
Oh, my God.
Boom. Thank you, everybody. Enjoy your Halloweens, folks. Or Avery Johnson or Tony Parker.
Or Tony Parker.
Pick
yeah.
the spur you want.
John Bridges wants to know what team other than Vancouver will stubbornly insist for too long that they're a playoff team. Now, I have the Bruins making the playoffs this year, but I imagine that would be the answer for a lot of people is the Bruins would be the team that's going to hang on to that idea for too long.
But they have enough young dudes in the mix or close to it where I feel like they're close. Yeah. Like they have like Torrey Crew's not, I guess.
First round and Marchand are there for another decade or whatever. So.
All those dudes they drafted the year where they got all those first round picks. Like Vancouver is really the answer. Like when you're that bad and you're like, let's go throw a bunch of money at Louis Erickson so the Sedins can have someone to play with while they have like a year left basically before they fall off the cliff is a weird decision.
I think you could throw some love Detroit's way because Ken Holland has that team basically capped out and they're not even a playoff team this year.
Yeah, I think they're going to be really bad. But yeah. But they're capped out in a weird way too. They're capped out like based on like Zetterberg, and then they have the two goalie situation, which is kind of weird. And then they've overpaid for Jonathan Erickson.
Applicator.
Yeah, like they've like it's one thing to overpay for like, you know, Kyle Okposo when you right. feel like you're on the verge of going somewhere. Another thing to like overpay for like your mediocre second pairing right. and third line guys like he did. It's weird, but yeah, Vancouver. I don't know if there's really anybody else because like, it's weird. Like the West, like all the teams in the West that are good are obviously good.
Columbus. Columbus though. I think they know they're rebuilding, right?
Do they though?
I don't know. They didn't hire a guy that would indicate they're rebuilding. That team coached the team.
Like there's certain teams where like I can see the plan and I like it, and I can see the plan and don't like it. I can't even see the plan that Columbus has. I have no idea what they're doing.
That's because you don't speak Finnish. If you spoke Finnish, the plan is right in front of you.
It's
Borka. Anyways. Two Girls, One Puck wants to know, are there any players that you have met that you would really enjoy hanging out at a bar with them? And she says, refs don't count to me, which of course is a Tim Peel reference.
I get it.
We had tequila together and he got suspended for it.
I've had beers with Doug Murray. He's a nice guy.
I was thinking about this question and I would say...
But would want to?
I know people have told me he's kind of douchey, but I've always found my conversations with David Backes have been really nice.
He doesn't come across as douchey.
No, I've heard people say that he's douchey.
But like once the camera goes away.
Yeah, or like in life.
Oh, I know who it would be. Shane Doan. That guy's goofy and funny. He probably has some really great stories.
He is kind of goofy.
Yeah.
You'd want to be with a goofball.
I feel like maybe he might not drink though. I think he might be.
Dude, I don't think he does.
Yeah.
I think he drinks. He drinks the blood of Christ.
Did you know Donald Trump apparently doesn't drink?
I know.
Like that's if there was one dude who I thought was drunk 24/7, it would be Donald Trump. So like you never know until you actually get to know somebody and you find out what their situation is. But like I feel like that would be a fun beer or two.
I would have to imagine.
Shane Doan with Donald Trump.
You know who I would like to have a beer with and hang out with only because I think that as a guy who's sort of a cynic in life like me. Like Marc-Andre Fleury is the happiest guy I've ever met, pretty much.
He is a delightfully bubbly person.
Yeah, I think the flower, as Rob Rossi would call him.
Flower. The goal in the second period you scored on yourself. Do you wish you had that one back?
Best Rob Rossi story of all time. He's working in the bowels of the Washington, D.C. arena. He can't get the internet to work. He throws his laptop on the table and pretty much breaks it and goes, how the fuck are they going to call this place the Verizon Center if you can't get the fucking internet to work?
Like the first time I ever interacted with Rob Rossi was during the Ottawa All-Star game when the Crosby neck vertebra thing was happening.
When Brisson was there?
Yeah. And everyone's like, oh, dude, you're going to love Rob. He's a fun dude. And I'm just like, where is he? And I see a guy off in the distance like slamming his computer against the wall in the press box. Like, go say hi to him. No, I'm going to wait.
All right. Two more questions because we got a boogie. Do you put sugar on?
Yes. Next question.
Brian Roberts wants to know, do you put sugar on before or after milk in cereal? What? Who puts sugar on cereal?
Yeah, I don't put sugar on cereal.
Yeah, if you want to have cereal, you get it pre-sugared, right?
I mean, yeah, like I have like Frosted Flakes. I don't buy like Cheerios and put sugar on them. Although buying Oreos and putting sugar on them sounds like a good idea.
Vicious Pibble wants to know, best type of noodles? That's a great question because honestly, I would answer it... I would answer those wide noodles that you get in like beef chow fun in Chinese food. The wide noodles. Hmm. Not udon and not the little tiny ones, but the wide, wide noodle. Like, they look like tapeworms just to make it even more appetizing. Mm.
See, my immediate thought was like buttered noodles. I wasn't even thinking like Asian noodles.
Like a, what's a butter noodle? Oh, I know. They're the same kind of noodle. The one with the ridges?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's something your grandma did.
Right. I mean, I haven't had it since I was like 13.
You got like a bad belly.
But noodles, like it's noodles. Like,
here, David, have some butter noodles and some delicious seltzer water for your tummy tum.
Fucking seltzer water. Started on seltzer water.
Sorry. Yeah. Ginger ale was the reference I was trying to go to there.
But, the best noodles are the noodles you put in your chicken rice soup that you get, the crispy, hard noodles. Mm-hmm. That's my final answer.
There you go.
Boom.
All right. And finally.
Where do you got to go? Got nowhere to go.
I gotta do a hit
of cocaine.
Of cocaine. Because hockey wants to know, we think John Taffer ends up coaching the Columbus Blue Jackets. Where would John Taffer of Bar Rescue be best suited to coach in the National Hockey League?
Wait, what was the beginning of the
they
premise?
Think that John Taffer will end up coaching the Columbus Blue Jackets. Where do you think John Taffer of Bar Rescue would be best coaching in the National Hockey League? Because I have an answer.
I don't understand the question.
They want to know where John Taffer should coach.
But like, wait, why?
I don't know.
I don't understand the premise. So he can fire people?
I'd go with the Colorado Avalanche.
Because?
For two reasons. One, because I think it's all there. They just need someone to organize it. They just need someone to do something with it.
Oh, see, I'm looking at it as a situation where he would go and get the most angry and want to yell at people.
No, I think it's all there. He needs to create a butt funnel. He needs to get some new taps
butt
in there.
Funnel.
They just need to clean up the kitchen a little bit. And then also, so he can change the name. He's gonna take down the sheet over the stadium and change the name of the team to like the Denver Beer Emporium or whatever the fuck.
I feel like John Taffer took over the Panthers this summer based on everything they did. Think about it. They changed the uniforms. They fucking gave out a bunch of weird contracts to people.
A lot of people don't realize that Sunrise, Florida is the military capital of Miami-Dade County. Lots of military. I've given you a logo that speaks to that. People are going to see that logo and they're going to say, that's my kind of bar.
I designed the city completely so everyone's funneled towards the arena, so they have to go in there. And once they're in there, they're locked into the seats for 3 hours and you'll sell out every game. It's called a countywide butt funnel.
You want to get your house in order? Get Brian over here out the door. He's making $7.9 million and he's 39 years old.
He sits down with like Dale Town. He's like, do you still care about this place? Because I'm looking around and, you know, based on the shape of the roster, I don't think you care anymore. And then Dale Town like throws up his arms and walks out. And then he comes back with like tears in his eyes after the commercial break. I love it here, okay? I do. I came here with a dream and I just want to make things right with the rest of the players. That's what I wanted to hear, Dale. What I wanted to hear.
That's the show.
What a
marathon. That's it for the show this week on Puck Soup. Thanks to John C. McGinley. Stand Against Evil is the show on IFC. It is something worth your time. Do check it out. Starting in November on IFC. I'm Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports Puck Daddy blog. You can listen to my other podcast, Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Do you have a book?
From Sportsnet. I do have a book, Dave. It's called Take Your Eye Off the Puck, How to Watch Hockey by Knowing Where to Look. It's available on Amazon.com and wherever books are sold. And here is Dave Lozo.
I got the horse right here. His name is Paul Revere. And the guy says if the weather's clear, Ken Bone.
Ken Bone.
Ken Bone.
Ken Bone.
This guy says the horse Ken Bone.
Ken Bone.
Goodbye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.